It is with great pleasure that I welcome you all to the beginning of the 2018-2019 academic year at St. John's College. I'd like to extend a particularly robust welcome to those members new to our community, the undergraduate class of 2022, and the new members of the Graduate Institute. We are delighted to have you with us. It is in reflecting upon these new additions to our community that I would like to begin my remarks this afternoon. We are joined today by newly minted Johnnies from every corner of the country, from Washington State to Florida, Maine to Southern California, with Alaska thrown in for good measure. We also have with us many who come from across the world, South Korea, the United Kingdom, Canada, China, the Dominican Republic, Norway, Japan, Peru, Vietnam, Albania, Belgium, Egypt, and elsewhere. If we pause for a moment to reflect, it'll strike us just how unlikely this assemblage is. Imagine your own idiosyncratic pathway to St. John's College. Perhaps you first heard about the college through a chance encounter with a stranger sitting next to you on the stool of a diner. Perhaps your interest was piqued by a poster with an imposing stack of books and the name of an unfamiliar institution. Perhaps a mentor nudged you towards the writings of Jacob Klein or Eva Braun. Your presence here began with a spark of one sort or another. Your interest was kindled. A sort of inchoate desire was set alight. And then there was a journey. You left an elsewhere to inhabit this here. Maybe there were palm trees in your rearview mirror. Maybe you stepped from a platform onto a train. Maybe you lit a candle in a temple before departing. Maybe you shared a meal around a beloved table with family and friends. Maybe you simply walked down the street. And now we mark your arrival and admission to our college. The word college is derived from collegium, which is formed from a Latin compound, co-ligare, to bind together. Thus, the diversity that we bring to this institution, a diversity that extends beyond geography to the nearly inexhaustible variety of human kinds, is merely circumstantial, is pointless, in fact, without a binding purpose. Unless we are gathered to fulfill the ends for which our collegium has been constituted, we are little better than travelers passing one another in an anonymous air terminal, briefly sharing a location as we proceed to our varied destinations. So then, what is our telos? In what sort of crucible are we shaped into a college? I would like to suggest that our telos, the end for which we are gathered, is civil discourse. But I would like to distinguish what we at St. John's consider to characterize civil discourse from the way that it is generally understood in contemporary society. The decline of civil discourse in our culture is now a well-worn trope. There is much hand-wringing about the fact that we appear to have lost the capacity to speak to one another across intractable political, cultural, and social divisions. We seem eager to shout, to decry, to stigmatize, to negate those with whom we disagree. If only, the pundits say, if only we could find a way to speak across differences, we might be able to coexist, if not harmoniously, at least less discordantly. The meaning of civil discourse in this context is something like polite conversation. It suggests that we ought to treat one another courteously as we each bring forward our fixed ideas about important topics. It is essentially agonistic. It allows perhaps for a degree of persuasion, but it is predicated upon the conceit that we bring to the table our already settled opinions. Civil discourse, as it is thus understood, represents a sort of well-ordered agora, where we bring to market those commitments we have cultivated elsewhere. By managing efficaciously the exchange of ideas and their evaluation according to the principles of the market, we achieve a degree of civility. I would say, however, that this is the opposite of what we do at St. John's College. The tables around which we gather are not fora where we civilly exchange opinions. They are rather, in the words of the prologue in Shakespeare's Henry V, the very forges and working houses of thought. Civility may be a precondition of discourse, but it is not its purpose. Earlier, I referred to something called the St. John's community. I would now like to modify that description of our common enterprise. A community is an affective association, a circumstantial gathering. We find ourselves living next to neighbors or born into a particular group. What links us one to the other as a community are common interests or shared experiences. This may describe St. John's at a superficial level, but it is not how we describe ourselves. At St. John's, we define ourselves as a polity. A polity is organized around clearly articulated principles of governance. We are a civil association, a city of a sort, a polis, and one like all polities constituted towards specific ends. At St. John's, our collegium is bound together by speech. Our telos is conversation conducted within the boundaries of our constitution. We are a speaking city. Conversation is both what we do and what we are meant to uphold. What we engage in, therefore, as a speaking city is quite literally civil discourse. Yet we are not engaged in speech so that our accidental community might be sustained. We form an intentional community so that conversation can be sustained. Although we have arrived from a great many points of origin and have been shaped by a dizzying multiplicity of experiences, we meet on the common ground of the program. Here we find voices that come from even farther afield than we have. They have been carrying on their own conversation in many, many iterations over many generations, and we are invited to join them. Our interlocutors are not simply those of us at the table, but also the great books that we read in common. We do not read the great books, however, but rather great books. And while they may have been characterized as great by the consensus of time or even the vicissitudes of chance, they are great for our purposes because they are generative of the highest order of discussion. We at St. John's have no pretensions to be comprehensive. Rather, our polity has selected over time those texts that suit our ends. While the program may challenge us with many things that we ought to know, we are really simply engaged in a singular project, that of coming to know ourselves. And we are committed first and foremost to a singular truth, that we come to know ourselves best through conversation with others. The word that really describes what we are after is dialogue. I've always found this to be a challenging term. Coming from the Greek dia logos, it means literally speaking through. Through what? I've often wondered. In the case of our civil discourse, I think it means something like speaking through the strictures of our polity, through the habits, customs, and mores that our common enterprise instills in us as we speak to one another. Or perhaps it is speaking through a mediating mind. In dialogue, we do not speak by ourselves, that's monologue, but we are involved rather in a circuit of discussion, a dialectic, if you will. We depend upon the other for self-knowledge. Thus, the mouth has as its receiver the ear. Listening is essential. Stringfellow Barr, in his Notes on Dialogue, put listening front and center. This ear is the critical component of dialogue, according to Barr. He writes, Plato and Shakespeare both speak of the mind's eye that alone sees intellectual light. I suggest there is a mind's ear, too, a listening, mindful ear. I suggest that the chief reason that conversations deteriorate is that the mind's ear fails. I am inclined to push this even further. What we are truly committed to in our commitment to dialogue is neither simply what is said or what is heard. In fact, if we cruelly conceive of logos as speech alone and dialogue as the exchange of speech, we are in the camp of the sophists, who held speech to be a sort of plastic thing bound to an agenda. At St. John's, however, we are committed to logos in its fullest manifestation. We hold firmly that logos represents the very principle of order and knowledge. When we engage in dialogue at St. John's College, we are not simply speaking to one another. We are exercising our faculty of reason as we search out the lineaments of truth. And in these moments, we are both inquiring into logos, attempting to scry the order of things, and agents of logos, the means through which truth reveals itself. This, I would assert, is the most profound promise of dialogue. So, how do we sustain our enterprise? How do we continue to fulfill our commitment to dialogue? There are three elements, I would suggest, that enable our conversations and that characterize civil discourse at St. John's College: intellectual humility, the recognition of the equal dignity of all around the table, and the passion for truth. Intellectual humility is the starting point of reasoned discourse. We are each on this planet for a brief time, making our way as best we can. Yet we are buffeted by fear, desire, will, circumstance, and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. The knowledge that we pick up along the way comes to us in teaspoonfuls, in fragments. It is necessary to hold opinions to make our way through life, but we ought to hold them gingerly. As we try to come to seek the truth about things in the company of others, it is imperative that we recognize that we are all fellow travelers. We are each equally dignified by our capacity for reason. Our dialogue must be attended by respect, patience, and fair-mindedness. From these will emerge trust, which will in turn elevate our discourse. The passion for truth, in the end, is what must animate our project. Intellectual humility may nudge us away from ignorance, but truth must be our lodestar, that towards which we are drawn. In the pursuit of truth, we must be scrupulous, fearless, and persistent. In fact, the gap between ignorance and knowledge, suspended between intellectual modesty and the hunger for truth, is where we join our exemplar, Socrates. So we are indeed a speaking city, committed to civil discourse. Yet we are committed to other aspects of the soul as well, especially those that touch upon beauty. Hence, we are also a singing city. At this moment, at the beginning of this journey, I would like to invite Mr. Stoltzfus to lead our students in a particular offering of beauty to sustain us as we move forward into the academic year. Mr. Stoltzfus. you all for that truly inspiring rendition of Sicut Servus. Thank you, Mr. Stoltz. Thank you, students. It's great to see you guys here. Welcome back. Immediately following the ceremony today, please join us for a reception outside Francis Scott Key Auditorium. I'd like to ask all guests to remain in their places until the platform party, freshmen, new GI students, and faculty have proceeded out. So it is with great pleasure I now officially declare the college in session, convocatum est.